time. There are a few Jewish organizations which pay on time.
Orsamath doesn't pay on time?
I have to bill Orsamath to get paid. So
really?
Therefore, it's not... Because I'm not a full-time employee. So, therefore, it doesn't...
You don't work for free?
What?
You don't work for free?
I would love to.
For the mitzvahs?
I do it for the mitzvahs.
So I love
So, believe me, for what Orsamath pays, it's mostly symbolic. So we work during the day, so one of the places pays on time, that's the modern Orthodox school, although I don't think all modern Orthodox schools pay on time. But
what do you mean by on time?
What?
What do you mean by on time?
Within the year.
No, every 2 weeks.
Oh, like a two-week
period. They pay, they'll pay you, yeah, 2 week period. But I've worked for yeshivas which have been 6 months behind.
Wow.
And I have worked in another yeshiva in which perennially, you have to go every month and beg for your check, literally. Well, you have to go up to the financial minister and say, can I please send my check now? So they say, no, not today. Maybe tomorrow. Come back tomorrow.
Are you sure?
Yeah.
I haven't got my check yet from Yeshiva.
From any of your pay periods?
No. They paid me pretty much on time for a while. Just this last one, they're like, we don't have the money.
Yeah.
So it's totally up to me whether or not they're over an Easter then, right? Because if I say in my mind, I agree that I'll accept my payment whenever they want to pay me, then they get no sin. But if I say, no, I want to be paid on time, then they have a sin.
Correct.
So I should really forgive them, otherwise someone's paying on my behalf because of me.
That's
and
true.
Therefore,
well, it's interesting. A couple of things. First of all, the question is why yeshivas don't pay on time. I mean, not why. What rational justification they have not to pay on time according to halacha? We know why they don't pay on time. They don't have money, or at least they can claim they have no money. But the reason there's an assumption that, by the way, who gets paid in yeshiva first, do you know?
The janitors.
The non-Jewish help, they get paid first. And then it goes.
All true for second.
What?
Me and Seth got paid much before the other rabbis.
Oh, yeah?
The other rabbis don't get paid.
But what about other secular teachers?
They get paid, but we're a priority.
Are you teaching the school?
I was.
Not here.
And the yeshiva down the room.
Usually secular teachers get paid before Rebbeim. But the assumption is, although I don't know who gave them the right to make this assumption, but Rebbeim are like management, meaning they're part of the entity which is paying, not part of the entity which is being paid. So therefore, they can, tough on them. They're part of the venture, they should wait as long as possible.
It's just a really nice way of saying, ha ha, you're not getting paid.
Yeah. It works okay in an institution where all the Rebbeim are in the same boat, but unfortunately, in some institutions where I've been, there have been different policies for different people, and the Rosh Yeshiva got paid before the lower level Rebbeim. So that is kind of disgusting. And what Ron asked, whether he has to be Muslim, it's interesting, we have a prayer which we say once a year on Yom Kippur, which is called Tefillah Zakah. Does anybody ever say that? It's a very long prayer that people say before Kol Nidre or right after Kol Nidre. So in this prayer, it talks about, I'm a terrible sinner, but God should forgive me anyway, in many different ways. It's happened to be a very beautiful prayer, but one of the things in the prayer says, I forgive anybody who did anything to me wrong. It's the first time teaching an Orsamath that somebody actually asked permission to. I'm stunned. I wish a Kushner they would ask permission to believe it or not. The Tefillah Zakah says that I forgive everybody who's committed any evil against me because I want God obviously to forgive me, and we know that God forgives those who forgive others, except for people who are holding on to money that I can take them to court and claim.
It says that, except?
Yes. In other words, it says specifically money I can take to court and win in court. Not just I can take to court frivolously, but I can take to court and win in court. So it's interesting, you're not required, it seems, based on Tefillah Zakah, to be meichel, to forgive money which is coming to you, which is rightfully yours. You should forgive insults, slander, all sorts of stuff like that, but not money which is rightfully yours.
But
you don't have
anything to do so that they don't burn.
Yes, it's nice to do it. Yes, it is a nice
prevent their burning.
Oh no, I say burn.
Yeah,
burn.
It's a nice thing to do. I suspect that even, this is the truth, I suspect if, that even if you forgive them, and they're not burning on account of you, they're going to burn on their own account. Because they shouldn't...
because if I agree to get paid whenever they convene, then they're not over the system of not paying their employees.
You're right, if you agreed explicitly, but most people have never actually agreed to this. It's just been placed upon them.
Because if you agree to it, then you'll never get paid.
So let's say you're willing to forgive it, so then that's one thing. But if they never ask you, they just assume that you're willing to forgive it, so then that's another thing. Anyway, so many people who thought in yeshivas over the years are very bitter about the existence of this prohibition in the Torah, which doesn't seem to be followed by many institutions, but that's life in the Jewish world. The next pasuk shifts gears. It's a very interesting shift. Here we talk about monetary issues. Now we come and talk about interpersonal issues without money. In other words, you might think that the only thing we care about is your monetary relationships with other people. And in fact, in secular society, that's all we care about. If you go, and I assume in secular society, in secular law, I mean, if you go out in the middle of the street and you start calling somebody names, is there some way that can be prevented?
When?
What?
Slander,
I think, is only if you publish something.
Yeah.
Right.
Oh, really? The concept of stolen information is publicizing.
What?
Publicizing.
Yeah, but I think publicizing specifically in print or in a public forum.
Defamation character. It can be if you just say it. If people hear it and people hear it, that's the definition of
publicizing. That's okay. I don't know. So maybe if there are a lot of people around, so then you're not allowed to do it. But let's say it's just one-on-one, right? Right, and you constantly go every day up to Yanko, and you say to Yanko, Yanko, you're a jerk, you're a schmo, I hate your guts, you're incompetent, stupid. You know, you go day after day, insult him over and over and over again.
I'll take away his alcohol.
So then there's really nothing in secular law that actually can prevent you from doing that. If you don't have that ethic, that it's bad to insult or be nasty, so then there's nothing which can prevent you from being that way.
There is in other countries, though. There's a country in one of these places where everyone kills each other, and like it just has a new law, a Lashon Hara law, basically, that basically if you say anything bad about anyone else, you can go to jail.
I think that's Mexico.
In South Africa, we have a similar, we have a law which is a very new to constitutional law that's in the constitution. It prohibits, there's three times you can't speak about them. You can't if it's gone in Saad Farden, it's gone in Saad Pit Sarah. The position is of a taste speech. So if you like insult a person on the basis of them being Jewish or them being black or whatever, that's hate speech and it's a constitutional crime.
Right. In America, there is kind of hate crime. I don't know exactly how it's defined, but it certainly is a concept. But if I just come in and insult your intelligence and your lineage and all that kind of stuff, so there's nothing they can do to me because that's equal opportunity, right?
I hate you, but right, distinguish.
So what's fascinating here is that the next pasuk says here, lo tekalel cheresh, you shall not curse the deaf. You know, the deaf person doesn't hear. Yet nevertheless the Torah forbids even. The assumption is, obviously you shouldn't curse somebody who can hear, but you can't even curse somebody who does not hear, even though he doesn't hear. Now there are two different schools of thought in why that should be forbidden in Judaism. One school of thought is the more Kabbalistic school of thought, and the other is the more rationalistic school of thought. Can you guess what each one says?
Well,
just the word first.
The completely original, never heard it before, making itself completely on the spot. Apparently there's a lot of power in speech.
Which school of thought are you explaining?
The Kabbalistic one.
Go ahead.
Well, whichever one Rabbi Kalski said this morning on this very line.
And this very line you spoke about?
Yeah.
Which class was that?
Going through the biblical history of something.
It's not this part. Okay.
There's lots of power in speech.
Okay.
So that's how you judge someone is how God also judges them.
How you enunciate judgment, verbalize judgment.
Yeah. So if you use horrible to someone, then you can actually determine their faith.
Okay, that's very good for the Kabbalistic school of thought. Now, what would you say from the more rationalistic school of thought?
Could it possibly be that in other countries of Gnavis and Gazlanus, that the Gazlan is more at this because he fears man but not God, right? So now in this case, the person who curses the deaf is more scared, wouldn't curse someone who's hearing him because he's scared of what that person would do against him, not what God does to him. The person who curses the deaf curses him because he's scared what the person who can't hear him might do to him. That's why he curses the deaf, but he doesn't care what God does
to him. That's very nice. According to the Parshas, the simple reading of the Torah, which says you're not supposed to curse particularly a deaf person, but according to the rabbis who say that it means even a deaf person shouldn't curse, so it doesn't really work out that well. Because it's not specifically a deaf person.
Maybe just so you don't get used to, psychologically, you don't get used to cursing someone out, and then therefore you won't curse out anyone who can hear either.
Right. Well, that's the point. A rationalistic,
Maybe that's just like that you shouldn't be thinking ill about people and putting yourself.
Okay, same idea. The rationalistic perspective is that, the way Rabbi Hirschfeld said, who was like a super rationalist, he says, words don't mean anything. I can stand here and curse you from today till tomorrow, and it's all meaningless, right? It's very non-Kabbalistic. They're all meaningless, but I'm a bad person if I do that, right? Because it's corrupting myself by cursing you. So therefore, it's not so much because it affects you, it won't affect you necessarily at all. But I cannot do things which indicate corruption on my part. It's interesting, Gemara. Gemara says that if you have a well from which you drank, you should not toss a stone into that well. Which is very strange. Come on, what does the well care if you toss a stone in or not?
So being grateful to that which was good to you.
Right, so the thing is, it's obvious that the well is an inanimate object, right? It doesn't actually have feelings. It doesn't get insulted if you throw a stone into it. But because of the issue of gratitude, inculcating yourself with the attribute of gratitude, so therefore you're supposed to refrain from throwing water into the well. I guess if you're a really, really, really extreme Kabbalist, you'd say that, well, there is a malach, an angel who's in charge of the well. It's like there's an angel who's in charge of everything. And therefore, we don't want to, to partook of this angel's resources. You don't want to be ungrateful or demonstrate, lack of gratitude by throwing the stone in. But those are two different perspectives, whether it is because of what the impact it has or because of what it does to me. Both are true, both are valid, assuming that there is an impact to what I say. The director, Rabbi Noah Weinberg, says, one of his tapes, he says that one of his proofs that there is an innate conscience, a sense of morality and ethics which a human being has, which he uses as one of his proofs for the existence of God, of something which is divine, is that if you offer somebody millions and millions of dollars to go to his mother's grave and start jumping up and down on it and spitting on it, then nobody would take you up on the offer.
That's a generalization.
Yeah. What? Right, nowadays, I'm sure that somebody would, actually. But hypothetically, he's saying that there's certain things, there's certain red lines that everybody has. Right? And maybe somebody at some point would break, but most people, it would take an awful lot to get them to do that. Why? What's the difference? She's dead. She's gone. Right? There's nothing there. Just crumbling bones. So therefore, he says, it must be that there's this innate, intrinsic sense of the divine. Let me get you need another dollar.
Because
the Talmud made you have to buy the same thing as what?
As you, Daddy. Because
he didn't have a dollar.
Is that a bad thing? I don't really want to get that.
Oh, so you got something you didn't really like it, so did you eat it anyway?
Yes.
Oh. Why'd you eat it if you didn't really want it?
Because I still
like
it,
though
I
didn't
want it.
You didn't like it, even though you didn't want it. Mm. Okay, don't spill my coffee. Please be careful. Okay, here's another.
Why, Rabbi? Why? It's so easy, Rabbi. He made me buy a donut in business, so I really didn't want.
They sell donuts in business?
Yeah.
There's a whole bakery.
Really?
No, why?
They owe me a quarter.
And alcohol is probably very
real.
They don't owe me, of course.
I've never really been there, my visions. I think I've gotten there since I moved to Muncie less than five times. The, I've never gone exploring. Where are all of these stores?
Downstairs is like a, there's like a little room that has like bread and like different stuff around, and then like there's this little store that's open like very late at night, and that has a bunch of alcohol and food.
Nice.
And a big wine selection.
Even small. Okay. Yeah. You're not supposed to curse a person even if he's deaf, again, either because of the reason that power, speech has tremendous power, or because of the reason that it's not ethical for yourself, or both. A little bit, I guess, since Rabbi Rakowski spoke about it this morning, it's not so important for me to expand on it, but a little bit about the power of speech. There's an interesting the discussion in the Gemara. The Gemara says that Rabbi Shimon bar Yochai said he wishes, I think it's Rabbi Shimon bar Yochai, it says it wishes we had two mouths, one for Torah and for Tefillah, one for learning and davening, and the other to speak. The other speaks about mundane matters, about the daily life. So then one of the other talmidim said, no, this, look at how much lashon hara we do with one mouth. Imagine how much lashon hara we do if we had two mouths. But a lot of Judaism is based on speech. A lot of Judaism is based on speech because speech is what makes a person unique over an animal. An animal also has capacity to do things. Only a human being has the power of speech. So therefore, we give a lot of stress in Judaism to davening and learning, and also to other mitzvahs like Kiddush, which has to do with speech because of this great power which speech has. The halacha is, strictly speaking, on a Torah level, one doesn't fulfill the mitzvah of learning Torah unless one speaks the words of Torah. Meaning, you either have to speak yourself, or if you're listening to me speaking, or somebody else speaking, we have a principle, shomea ka'onis. Somebody who listens is as if they heard. As if they said it. But if I'm just reading by myself, that's not, strictly speaking, the Torah mitzvah of learning Torah. You got that? It's nice. The Pasuk says in Yehoshua, it's good to think thoughts of Torah day and night, but that's not the primary mitzvah. That's why we are meticulous after we make the Birchas HaTorah, the bracha on learning in the morning, to specifically say words of Torah. Because if you don't say words of Torah, then you just think words of Torah, then the bracha is not going on anything specific. So it wouldn't really work.
So if you read an English book on Torah and you don't say it out loud, then you're not learning Torah.
Right. But not just English book, you read a Gemara.
Gemara.
Right.
But if you're hearing someone say it, then it's like
just like by clear up the Torah, yeah.
That's not fair.
Why is not fair?
I get more by reading it to myself than reading it out loud. What if my...
Don't read it out loud.
Then I won't be learning Torah.
So what?
Listen, so what?
You have to learn Torah. The entire thing you have to do is miss from learning Torah?
No, but...
You learn a bit of Torah, and the rest of the time you think. It's okay. Does this bother you?
Yes.
Why? You want more eternal reward.
Just if the only reason why I read, you know, a Jewish book instead of a secular book is for the idea of learning Torah.
Well, that's a problem.
Oh.
It's a problem with the attitude, not a problem with the issue. You're not a problem with the religion. It's a problem with your attitude.
That was my attitude.
Why? You shouldn't learn Torah because it's a mix-up.
Oh, no?
No.
What do you say? This kid's a genius, by the way. Ask me about the theory of relativity.
It's not going to help with this question. The shouldn't learn Torah because it's a mitzvah. You learn Torah because you enjoy it. So when you learn Torah because you enjoy it, so then, you know, you enjoy it. Whatever way makes you enjoy it better, more is the way you
enjoy
it.
But if you're not learning Torah, then what are you enjoying? You're just thinking?
Yes, but that's what the Pasuk says in Yisrael, comes to teach us that don't think that just thinking in Torah is meaningless. No, it's not possible that the Torah recognizes to speak words of Torah all the time. You can speak words of Torah on occasion when you're a Beis Medrash, when you're at the Chavrusa, when you're teaching somebody else, when you're involved in the Shiur, but other times, it's fine to just sit and think Torah for.
So you don't get the mitzvah of Torah study.
Right.
So it says you should learn Torah in the morning and night, so at some point during the day and some point during night, during our reading of something, we should say a couple of lines out loud.
Well, you don't have to, because we fulfill that with Shema.
What?
The Shema fulfills.
Oh, yeah, that's true.
Right, the Shema is in the morning and night, is what is the basic minimum of learning Torah every day. That's all you really have to do.
Exactly, right, but if when you learn, you just speak it out loud and you fulfill the mitzvah of reading Torah, so if you read an English book on Torah and you read it out loud, would that be fulfilling the mitzvah?
if what it says is true. Okay. Faith.
But also there's two methods of learning Torah, right? There's learning Torah, which is a fill of saying Shema, and then there's like to be involved, like Russian even so. It's like the Torah, like to be busy with it,
mm-hmm.
right? To really go into it. So that second part of the mitzvah, is that part of the mitzvah also only if you say that loud, or is it just the first part? No.
It seems that way because it says we say in that bracha itself, like self the divine Torah, it's talking about being bound to it says Barevna et divrei Torahcha befinu, make the Torah sweet in our mouths. What does it mean to your mouth? Not a candy, but it means that we're saying it. It should be sweet to us.
So we can't fulfill that aspect of the Shema then, because we're not delving into the Shema when we say it today. So
you mean you don't fulfill the concept of learning Torah in depth?
Right.
Just learning Torah superficially.
Right.
So that's correct.
That part of the
mitzvah. Right.
The other part of the mitzvah, you have to learn Gemara either from like an audio tape or saying it out loud.
Well, you can learn Chumash in depth too.
Or
anything you want to learn in depth, right? So there, yes, that would be that part of that quality or that aspect that you don't fulfill. Okay, what does the article say about Lot Gochayish? Just for curiosity. He says, even though he kind of had the curse to be embarrassed by it, because it's forbidden to curse him, surely therefore it is forbidden to curse those who are aware of what is being done to them. Okay, that doesn't add anything really to what we saw. Yes, it's a Kav Chom. Correct. Okay, now the end of the pasuk. This is actually one of the more famous prohibitions in the Torah because it's very far-reaching. Lifnei iver lo titein michshol. You should not put a stumbling block in front of a blind person. There actually is a whole discussion in halacha whether if you take a stumbling block, you take a big stone and you put it in front of a blind person. And he stumbles over it, whether you transgress this prohibition.
Yeah.
Right? Because almost all the sources, take this as being a metaphor.
Mm-hmm.
And that's why it's only a couple of actual sources hold that if you literally do it, you transgress this prohibition.
That's a very Jewish thing.
Yeah.
That if you actually do what it says, you might not actually.
Right, you might not transgress it. It's very Talmudic. So the bearing that in mind, that most people don't take it literally, so what it means is I shouldn't put in front of you something which for you is going to be a sin. Yes.
The 12 spies, isn't that God putting a stumbling block in front of the nation?
The 12 what?
Spies. The spies, who went to Israel.
Rather.
Oh, spies. The
spies.
I think it's the 12 spies. I don't know. What were the 12 spies? What were we wrong with that? some language gap. The 12 spies were in fact would have been considered stumbling block. Ron, the commentators beginning of the parsha there say that Moshe himself decided to send them in. So it's actually Moshe's exercising his own free will. It was compelled by the nation, but it was not God causing the stumbling block, but Moshe. But the Moshe himself. But the truth is that God is exempt from this prohibition.
God is exempt from everything.
Yeah. Well, no. The most mitzvahs God keeps. I don't know. I'm not sure if we can say every mitzvah, but the obviously doesn't keep kosher and stuff like that. But the whole idea of this world is to give people tests, right? So therefore, by definition, people being tested means there's a stumbling block put in front of you. But you're not supposed to test somebody else. So it leaves that to God, not you yourself. So therefore, let's say the classic case which is given is the case of a nazir. A nazir is forbidden to drink wine. Right? So let's say I give wine to a nazir. I don't pour it down his throat. I just give him a glass and say, here, have this. And he goes and drinks it, even though he made the choice. It was his free will which caused him to drink the wine. So nevertheless, he is liable for transgressing his prohibition. But I'm liable for this prohibition of putting a stumbling block in front of a blind person. Right?
Even if you make somebody sin, this prohibition is... does this prohibition take effect even if you make somebody sin? The person makes somebody sin.
Yeah, sure, of course. The thing is that there's two levels of this. There's the Torah level and there's the rabbinic level. The Torah level is the classic case given for the Torah level prohibition is if he couldn't have gotten at the wine otherwise. So if he could have gotten at the wine, let's say the wine was on the table, right? And I, instead of him coming over to the table and taking the wine himself, I picked up the wine and gave it to him. So then that's not Nafsibi Ufalitna either, because the wine was accessible to him. But it's only if the wine was on the other side of the river, the Gemara says. In other words, he would have to take a boat, and he has no boat, to get to the other side of the river, and you bring him the wine, which otherwise would not have been available to him, that you transgress Lifnei Iver, putting a stumbling block in front of him. Nevertheless, even on a Torah level, you don't transgress under those circumstances. On a rabbinic level, there is a prohibition, and this is one of the most far-reaching prohibitions in Judaism, which is called Misayeya Yidei Obrei Avera, to help, to literally, to sustain the hand of those who transgress prohibitions. Now, that means that any time you aid and abet a sin, a sinner, even if you're not facilitating the sin, then you transgress a prohibition. Facilitating the sin, which otherwise could not have been taken place, that is the total prohibition of the sinner. To aid and abet a sinner, that's something which you're not allowed to do, but only on a rabbinic level. So the many, many different cases of Lifnei Iver, we have constant questions. By the way, Lifnei Iver also applies to non-Jew. And this is why, for example, let's say you are a Jewish doctor, right? And you are asked to assist in an abortion, let's say, or some other procedure which is forbidden to non-Jews. They're not allowed to have abortions. Jews under certain circumstances are, but non-Jews are not. So therefore...
Non-Jews are not allowed to have abortions?
No.
Even at the danger of the wife? Still.
What?
Even at the danger of life to the mother?
It's a good question. It's an interesting question. Yeah.
Isn't that the only case in Judaism?
What?
Isn't that the only case in Judaism where you can have an abortion?
No, no. There are many, but there are post-Kilim Masih under cases of where the child is severely deformed or something like that. And there is even a case of one post-Jewish line, Sitzel Yezer, who permits abortions up to the 6 months in the case of the Tetax. So there are cases.
What's Tetax? Tetax
is
a
Jewish disease which kills a kid.
It's a muscle,
man. There's
isn't
no
it? It's a muscle degenerative disease.
Yeah.
So only Jewish disease?
Yeah. Ashkenazi
Jews. Yeah. Ashkenazi Jews are the most disease-ridden portion of the population of the world. Not the case, but they've been studied more than any other segment population. So
well,
the
if you've been right, aren't you allowed to have a woman doctor give you, well, I suppose they're all a woman doctor, but if you've been right, aren't you have an abortion?
What?
If you've been right, aren't you allowed to abort that baby in
the first 40 days?
I heard no.
Why would you be able to? He's supposed to marry you now. Why should, what's wrong with the kid?
Say, what's a guy?
Okay, let's go ahead and
do
a story.
It
was a Jew, and you...
So we should hang him.
After you go out and rape someone, and they're shooting, as long as I'll marry them.
Then you have a kid to marry her after.
So if there's a hot chick, son.
Yeah. Here am I.
And she's rich, and I'm poor. So her father wants to allow her shit. All I have to do is go and rape her.
She has to
pay her money.
It's a catch. She has to be under 12 and a half.
Yeah. That's cool, right?
From 12 to 12 and a half.
This is the world of Michael Jackson. Yeah.
Yeah.
You have to take 50 kets of silver or something?
If you don't marry her.
If you don't marry her.
Right.
I'm sorry, Rabbi.
You'll forget. Okay, sorry. We'll finish this up anyway. The 40-day limit is actually up to 40 days. Abortion is very, very, I should say lenient, but it's relatively easy to have an abortion. Of course, Allah has to say 40. That's why the Jews theoretically should be for the morning after pill. Whatever it's called, IU-286 or something.
IU-486?
Jews allowed to take pills?
What?
You allowed to take pills?
Morning
after pill?
If the case where an abortion is indicated, then it would be permissible, yeah.
Wait, but does that even include, like, voluntary? Let's say a couple gets married and they don't want a kid yet, and then the wife gets pregnant before 40 days, you can just be like, I don't want it, and then just
no. But it's hard to define what the demarcation point is. It's something which has not been hard and fast sermons yet in halachic literature.
In terms of time frame or in terms of reason?
No, in terms of reason. Time frame is day 40. You know, the Tzitz Eliezer...
And it's all the same whether it's day 1 or day 39.
Right, it's all the same.
Okay.
So the body is not formed until day 40.
Because they have like a day after pill which like kills it in one day before it, you know, still like a jumble of cells.
Right. That's what I'm saying. That would be the... That's why, it's my opinion that Jews, you find very often many religious Jews who, there are religious Jews who believe that it's important for religious Jews to fight abortion, just like, you know, Catholics fight abortion. But that, I don't think that that's true, because we have cases in which abortion is permitted, which the Catholics hold is not permitted ever.
Right.
Catholics are very severe on abortion because, you know, if people get abort a kid, then the kid goes straight to hell. So therefore, they're very strict on abortion. So the kid can be born and be baptized, then he's saved. If he's not born, so he goes to hell. That's it. So therefore, to save the soul, they want the kid to be born. So they want an outright ban, essentially, on abortion. Well, we have no such desire because under many circumstances, abortion can be permitted according to Jewish law. And, up to the 40 days for many, many reasons. And after 40 days, also, according to many poskim, there are reasons which can be done. So
the Catholics believe that if the baby wasn't born, he's going to go to hell? So all Catholics believe, as soon as they come into this world, they're going to hell unless they get baptized.
Before coming into this world, and still...
Even before?
Yeah.
Why don't they even question God?
What?
Why don't they question God? Like,
Catholics?
Yeah.
It's not nice.
Yeah, why would God bring...
God, they say that it's original sin because of Adam and Rishon, so therefore it's his fault. Not God's fault. God just said it's his
fault. Catholicism doesn't necessarily have to be logical.
Plus, they don't
say that. There's many mysteries. The church has many mysteries. This is one of the mysteries of the church. You don't have to actually understand it.
It doesn't bother people?
I guess not.
Only converts to Judaism.
I guess it does bother some people, but a lot of Catholics say they try not to think about it.
You turn into atheists, a lot of them.
But they're still pretty successful. Personally, if I wasn't Jewish, I'd prefer to be a Catholic than any other form of Christian. Because there's pomp and ceremony, a lot of cool stuff in Catholicism. You know,
but Mormonism, you don't have to think at all, and every answer is you're part of it.
Okay. Anyway, maybe I'd be considered. Okay, we'll stop here for today.
Thank you, Alan.
So you're saying that there's listening ever on a Goy, so the Jewish doctor, and a Goy wanted an abortion, the Jewish doctor would not be able to do it.
Right, a Jewish doctor would, because he would not be, that would be listening even on a Goy. Even in cases where the state allows it, right, where the government allows abortion, he probably would not be allowed to have a good system of abortion.
So Goyim, their laws are more strict in abortion than Jewish? In which cases?
Which cases?
Yeah, which case can a Jew have an abortion in a Goy without being able to?
The case of danger to mother, like I said, I think it's only in Judaism that we say that's permitted. Because of Allah of Rodin. I don't think we say it's not so simple when in non-Jewish cases. Also, let's say, for example, the mother is under stress, right? Tremendous possibility that the mother will go crazy or something like that.
Right.
So then Judaism is a Duperman abortion, right?
So really, a Jew, or a Jew should be with the Catholics for a total ban on abortion for them, but with an exception for us.
Right.
So we just have to have a lot of Jewish abortion doctors, and then Bush can pass anything he wants, and then the Jewish doctor will do what he says.
That would work.